Okay. When you're on Parshas Bechukos, page 708. It's a relatively short parsha. Again, it's a separate parsha this week, not together. It's famous, this parsha. We're going to do a few things in the parsha, but it's famous for the blessings, but also the admonition, the reprimand that Hashem gives us, and outlining the consequences, what will happen to us if we don't do the right thing, and so on and so forth. And what's interesting is that this happens twice in the Torah, in this week's parsha, Bechukosai, and in Parshas Ki Sovei, which is towards the end of the Chumash. And both of them are read before a special event. So this we read not so long before Shavuos, and Parshas Ki Sovei, the second time this happens, we read it just before Rosh Hashanah, but not directly before Rosh Hashanah, in other words, 2 weeks before. And before we start, I want to just spend a couple of minutes on something, because there's a very interesting phenomenon this year that needs to be understood, and I just was doing a bit of research on it recently. You know, the last day of Pesach this year was Shabbos. Sorry? Yeah, Shabbos. And because it was Shabbos, we didn't read the Parsha of the week, because when Shabbos coincides with Yontif, we don't read the Parsha of the week, we read a special reading. But in Israel, it wasn't Yontif anymore. The last day of Pesach was a regular Shabbos, so they read the next Parsha. Right? They read Achrei Mos. And because of that, and this sometimes happens, we out of sync for a while. So when we say this week is Parshas Bechukosai, it is Parshas Bechukosai in most of the world, but not in Israel. In Israel, it's Parshas Bamidbar. Now that's fine, and that happens, and we've got to wait till there's an opportunity to catch up. The problem this year is that we know that there's certain portions in the Torah, right? There's certain portions in the Torah that come together. So we have what's called Parshas Mechuboras. In other words, because we've explained this before, that the Chumash is structured in such a way where any structure of a year, leap year or non-leap year, Yontif falling on Shabbos, not falling on Shabbos, we have a system that we can always read the Parsha of the week and finish on Simchas Torah. That's the idea, right? And so it's a very clever system. But the way it's structured is that certain Parshios lend themselves to be put together if needed, right? Three of those opportunities happen to be in the book of Vayikra, because just that's where it comes after Pesach and leap year and all kind of stuff. Two of them are in Bamidbar. So the three in Vayikra are Achrei Mos and Kedoshim. Those two can sometimes come together. Tazria Metzora and Bahar Bechukosai, last week and this week. And in Bamidbar, it's Chukas and Balak. And then the last one of Bamidbar, which is Matos Masei. Right? So, if we wanted to catch up with Israel, we actually had an opportunity to do it the Shabbos after Israel, after Pesach. Shabbos after Pesach, in Israel, it was Kedoshim, because by then it was already the second Shabbos after Pesach. For us, it was Achrei Mos. All we needed to do was join Achrei Mos and Kedoshim, and then catch up. We could have done it in 1 week. But instead, you'll notice what happens is we ignore the opportunity four times. We ignored Achrei Mos Kedoshim, Tazria Metzora this week, Mahar Bechukosai, and Chukas and Bolak, and we wait all the way to Matas Masei, which is very inconvenient, because Matas Masei actually put together is very, very long, extremely long. It's a very long Shabbos and Shul. Those are like aware of how, you know, which is, those who know how to look for the short parashas and the long ones, they know Matas Masei, you know, you fasten your seatbelt and you relax, because it's going to take a long time, right? And the question the Mefarshim, the commentaries ask is, why wait so long? We've had four opportunities to catch up to Israel. I mean, it's kind of a funny thing to be out of sync with Israel, particularly for those that travel. Nowadays, people travel more than in olden times. This once happened to me. I was in Israel on a Shabbos where the rest of the world was out of sync with Israel, and it was a different parsha. So I was one parsha, and Israel was a different parsha, which is not such a big problem, because you always find a minyan that has a diaspora minyan of people visiting. In Jerusalem particularly, you can always find a bunch of tourists. So the shul I went to had two they split for the Torah. I mean, they daven together, but when it came to Torah reading, they split. And you had the Israelis doing their parsha and the diaspora doing their parsha, although they didn't quite do it like that. The custom, particularly in this shul, obviously, was that when the diaspora people do the diaspora parsha, they catch up to Israel. So they do two parshas. Whatever parsha it is, they do two parshas. But whatever it is. But it's a very sort of unsettling thing. And we choose four, as I said, four opportunities. And only wait all the way to hook to Matos Masi to catch up. And the question is why. So I just did a bit of research on this recently, and I thought I'd share with you before we start the parsha. And that is the following. The Gemara says that this parsha, B'chukosai, should always be read close to Shavuos, and Parshas Kisove, which is the other parsha in the Torah that talks about harsh consequences, should be read close to Rosh Hashanah. The reason being, says the Gemara, because both Rosh Hashanah and Shavuos are all kind of a beginning of a new era. Rosh Hashanah, of course, is the beginning of the new year, and Shavuos also. Shavuos, says the Gemara, is a type of Rosh Hashanah. The reason it's a type of Rosh Hashanah is because it says in the there's a certain judgment that takes place on Shavuos as well, where apparently on Shavuos we are judged on the fruit of the tree. That's why it's the Chag HaBikurim, the festival of fruits, and the success of produce yielding fields for the next year. Actually, the cycle does not start from Rosh Hashanah; it starts from Shavuos. So it's like a Rosh Hashanah of sorts. And there's a phrase that the Gemara uses called Tichle Shana VeKilaloi Seha. Let the year end and all of its negative curses. Let it just be gone and let's start fresh. So therefore what we do is, if the Torah chooses to write in two sections, write sort of a bit of a harsh part of the Torah, which includes sort of warnings and reprimands and curses and things like that. So we want to do it before the new year, as if to say, okay, that was that year. All the negative things put in that year, start fresh. That's why we do it before Rosh Hashanah and we do it before Shavuos, to emphasize that concept. However, says the Gemara, we don't do it on the Shabbos directly before these festivals. We have one Shabbos in between, like a buffer zone. Because on the other hand, we don't want to, like Erev Rosh Hashanah, sort of be reading like harsh stuff and go into Rosh Hashanah in that mood. Nor do we want to go into Shavuos with all the negative stuff from Parshas Kisavai, Parshas B'chukosai, like this Parsha. So therefore, what we try and do is, we do, before Shavuos, we do B'chukosai, and then Bamidbar. Right? So this week is B'chukosai. Next week is Bamidbar. To create, so we want to do it close to Shavuos, but we want one Shabbos to be in between. Same thing with Rosh Hashanah. We want to do it, we do Parshas Kisavi, which is the harsh Parsha. And then we normally do Nitzavim just before Rosh Hashanah. So there's 1 week buffer zone. But we want to try, as much as we can, not to have too much of a buffer zone. Because otherwise it doesn't have the emphasis that it's close to Shavuos. So, unless you don't have a choice. So, in Israel this year, they don't have a choice. In Israel, they already read B'chukosai last week. So, they have now this week Bamidbar and next week Nosai. So, they've got 2 weeks in between the harsh Parsha and Shavuos. So, it loses a bit of the effect of having this Parsha close to Shavuos, but not too close. Yeah.
Were these Parshas set by Tom Hillel? No.
Nothing to do with it. It came later. But it was just developed later. Tom didn't go anymore. Yeah. In fact, in ancient times, there was two customs. Some people didn't even finish the whole Chumash in 1 year. Some used to finish the Chumash in 3 years. But then the custom developed to be uniform to do it all year. Okay. So Israel doesn't have a choice, but we do have a choice. So what we choose to do is, if we can help it, we only want to have 1 week between this Parsha and Shavuos. So therefore, we choose to ignore the three opportunities that we have in Vayikra, and we keep going so that we should be able to do B'chukosai this week, closer to Shavuos, and have only one Shabbos in between. That answers three out of the four opportunities. So then the question is, why don't we do the next opportunity? The next opportunity is in Bamidbar Chukas Balak. Right? So the answer is as follows. Very interesting. When we actually do it, is the parasha we call Matos Masai. Right? Matos Masai is always in the 3 weeks of mourning. And what normally happens is, Matos Masai is normally together, although the Israel's not this year because they're waiting for us to catch up. But Matos Masai is normally in the 3 weeks. The way it works is that there's three Shabbosim in the 3 weeks. And the first one is normally Pinchas. The second one is Matos Masai. And the third one is Dvarim, because part of the system is you always want to have Dvarim just before Tisha B'Av, for reasons that's not for now. Now, if we choose Chukas Bolok to catch up to Israel, then we're going to have to split Matas and Masa. In other words, we'll do Chukas and Bolok together, but Matas and Masa will be separate. And therefore, the 3 weeks will be Matas, Masa, and Dvorim. And we'll have the Parsha of Pinchas out of the 3 weeks. And if we can help it, we don't want that. Why? Why do we want to have Pinchas in 3 weeks? So Pinchas is a very interesting Parsha. Pinchas, number one, has the division of the land of Israel, of how the tribes had to inherit the land of Israel. It has the Parsha of sacrifices, and it has the Parsha of the festivals. All the sacrifices that were brought in the festival, the Yom Tov, and the Musaf sacrifices. In the 3 weeks, which is time of mourning, we want to, as much as we possibly can, strengthen the faith in the coming of Mashiach and strengthen the hope that the destruction will come to an end, particularly on Shabbos. Because the 3 weeks are 3 weeks of mourning, but the Shabbosim of the 3 weeks, we're not supposed to mourn, so we try and emphasize the hope, the yearning towards a better time, and so on and so forth. That's why we want Pinchas in the 3 weeks, because we want to talk about the division of the land of Israel and settling the land of Israel in the 3 weeks. We want to talk about the sacrifices, because we don't have sacrifices today, but at least we learn about them. And we want to talk about the festivals, because it gives us hope that the mourning period of Tisha B'Av will be transformed to a festival. And that's why we want Pinchas in the 3 weeks. And therefore, we choose to skip the next opportunity of Chukas Bolok, and we only catch up to Israel and Matas Masai, so that Pinchas should be in the 3 weeks. So everything has a system. So what it does is, it makes us out of sync from Israel from Pesach all the way till Tisha B'Av, or just before Tisha B'Av. But all for these reasons. Although in Israel they won't have two parshas, they'll have two parshas between B'chakos and Shavuos, and they won't have Pinchas in the 3 weeks. That's because they can't help it, because for them last their Pesach wasn't Pesach, it was Shabbos. And therefore they had to keep going. So therefore they don't have a choice, and it's been a leap year, so we haven't been able to keep the parshas behind. We'd have to use parshas on the various extra month, and therefore they don't have a choice, so they've got to have Pinchas out of the 3 weeks. But we have a choice, so we have B'chakosai just close to Shavuos, which is one break, and we have Pinchas in the 3 weeks, and that's why we wait till Matas Masai to catch up. So I thought, it's not what we normally do, but I thought it would just be interesting to explain. Everything has a reason, everything has a purpose and a system, and how it all works. Okay, so page 708. So what I want to do is, I want to just look at a couple of things in the first few psukim of this parsha, and then I'm going to show you something very interesting to do with the beginning of the parsha and the end of the parsha. Let's have a look. So the parsha starts on a very positive note and gives us the blessings that will happen when we adhere to what Hashem wants from us. And it says the following, 708. Im b'chukosai teilecho, Hashem says, if you will walk in my statutes, in my decrees, v'etz mitzvosai tishmeru, and you will guard my mitzvahs, v'asisim oisim, and you will do them. What will happen then? Let's just read the psukim quickly. Won't take that long to read the paragraph. And Asati Gishmechem Itam, Hashem says, I will give the rain in its right time. But Nosn Ha'aretz Yevula, and the land will produce its produce. For Eitz Hasada Yitain Pirioi, and the fruit trees will give its fruit. Visiglechem Daishas Botzir Botzir Yasi Gazara, and your threshing will last till the vintage, and the vintage will catch up to the planting. In other words, we'll be busy in the fields all year, because we'll always be, whatever the season is, we'll be very busy because we'll be in abundance. You'll eat your bread satisfactorily, you'll be satisfied. And you'll dwell securely in your land. I will give peace in the land. You'll be able to be settled there without fear. And I will destroy the wild animals from the land. And a sword shall not pass your land. Be able to pursue your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. Five of you will be able to pursue 100 enemies. And 100 of you will be able to pursue 10,000. You know, you realize the math there it doesn't match, right? No, that's because the more of you there are, the better the strength. In other words, it's just a lesson in togetherness. So five can handle 100, but 100 can manage not 20 times as much, but much more, 10,000. And your enemies will fall before you by the sword. I will turn to you, I will make you multiply, and I will uphold my covenant with you. You will eat very old grain and remove the old, but remove the old to make way for the new. It will be so much. And finally, I will place my sanctuary among you. In other words, I will dwell among you. I will not reject you. I will walk among you. I will be your God, and I will be my nation. And he ends up by saying, "Vani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God, Asher Yatzeisi Eschem Eretz Mitzrayim, Atzuki out of Egypt, Yoyslem avodim, from being slaves. For Eshber Moitois Ulchem, and I broke the burden of your yoke, I'll walk among you upright. All right, so that's the prophecy. Many of these prophecies actually refer to the Messianic era, as we've talked about before. And it refers to a utopian time where everything will be beautiful. Now, there's a famous thing which we mentioned before. Let's have a look at the first Rashi. Well, not the first Rashi inside, but have a look at the first Pasuk again. Pasuk says three things. Im chukaisai telechu, if you will walk in my statutes, in my decrees. Ves mitzvoisai tishvurin, you'll keep my mitzvahs, v'asisim oisim, and you will do them. So on the face of it, it all seems to be talking about keeping the mitzvahs. Although Rashi says, and the commentaries adopt this, coming from the Gemara, he says that the phrase im chukaisai telechu, if you will walk or follow my decrees, is actually not referring to Hashem's decrees. It's not referring to the performance of mitzvahs. Why? Because the next phrase is doing mitzvahs. So what's this? It says Rashi, shetiyu amelim b'torah. It's referring to in-depth toil, effort in Torah study. Okay? So that's what Rashi says. The problem, of course, that is that why use that phrase then? Why use that phrase in reference to Torah study? It should say, if you will learn my Torah, and you'll keep my mitzvahs and do them, then I'll give you all these rewards. If the Torah wanted to make reference to Torah study, it should have said Torah study. So why does it use the phrase, which seems like keeping mitzvahs? In fact, not only that, the word b'chukaisai, which comes to the word chukah, normally in the Torah refers to an irrational mitzvah. As you know, the mitzvahs are divided into three categories. One of them are mitzvahs beyond reason, that we do out of obedience, which seems the exact opposite of Torah study. Torah study is about understanding. It's about learning and trying to internalize and understand as much as we possibly can, with the recognition that there are things that we can't understand. That's fine. So it seems strange that the Torah should use the expression walking in Hashem's chukim, which are statutes, decrees, normally a reference to beyond reason decrees, and actually mean the mitzvah of Torah study with tremendous effort. So many Mefarshim talk about different things. I'm going to share with you, as I've been doing lately, a Kli Yoker, a beautiful Kli Yoker, which explains what it means, but also explains an amazing division, an amazing idea, insight into this whole parasha. He says, first of all, the reason that the Torah refers to Torah study with the word chukah is because the Torah is not talking about the concept of Torah study. That's not what the Gemara is talking about. The reward that the Torah wants to give us in this parasha is not for learning Torah. It's for learning Torah in a particular way. It's for learning Torah so that learning Torah becomes a chukah. What's a chukah? A chukah means a decree that is set in stone that's unmovable and it's not negotiable. It's just the way it is. You understand it, you don't understand it, it makes sense today, it doesn't make sense today. That's what a chukah is. So the Torah here is referring to, in fact, if you look at Rashi's words, Rashi doesn't say you will learn Torah. Rashi says, shetiyu ameilim b'Torah. You will work hard in Torah study. And therefore the Kli Yoker says, what that's actually referring to, it's referring to the concept which we call in Chazal, in Gemara, and in Shulchan Aruch, we call it the concept of kvius itim la Torah, to commit to times to study. Right? There's a concept brought down in Shulchan Aruch, there's the idea of learning Torah. Of course, we learn Torah whenever we can, the importance of study, whenever we can grab a bit of study, we do it. But then there's a concept of setting aside time to study, called kaveya itim, to establish fixed times of Torah study. In Shulchan Aruch, it's a very, very emphasized concept. To the point that those fixed times become such commitments that they're unmovable, unless it's an emergency kind of thing, right? There's no advertisement forbidden, by the way. It's just something that's a fundamental Torah concept. We hope to facilitate it, but it's not. Yeah. And he says that's the concept of a chukah. Chukah means that it becomes, and he quotes a medrash that's also why we have this chukaisai teilechu, to walk in this car. What do you mean to walk? So there's an interesting medrash. Medrash says that David HaMelech said, that he says, every day I get up and he said, I've got lots to do and I think I need to go here and I need to attend to this and attend to that. But I've trained myself, says King David, that raglai, my feet, just carry me to the Torah study hall, to the Beis HaMedrash, right? That's b'chukaisai teilechu, the concept of walking of being so trained just to go and attend to the kvius, the fixed time that we've set aside to learn Torah. Okay. Based on that principle, the Kli Yakar develops a very beautiful idea. He says, let's have a look at the Chumash. He says, in the reward that the Torah brings here, right? The Torah says the three times the word venosati, I will give you. I'll show you where they are. Look in Pasuk Vav, 6, verse 6 says, before that. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, venosati gishmeichem itma, I will give rain in its right time. The next one is verse 6, venosati shalom baris, I'll place peace in the land, right? And the third one is Pasuk Yud Aleph, verse 11, the last word on the page over here, 708, V'nasati mishkani b'sachem, I'll place my mishkan, my sanctuary among you. Right? Says the Yaakov, why? Because if you look in these rewards, the rewards divide into three categories. One is sustenance, rain, produce, enough to eat, being satisfied, and so on. The other one is security, protection, peace in the land, defeating the enemies, sword not coming into the land of Israel, and so on and so forth. And the third is Hashem's Mishkan, Hashem living amongst us, Hashem feeling comfortable with us, right? Those are the three things.
Isn't a lot of this in the Shema?
Yes, similar. Similar, yeah. Although different, the Shema is different apparently, because we'll see in a second. The Shema also, by the way, talks about giving rain, but differently if you look carefully.
Really?
Yeah. Over here it talks about giving it a proper time. In the Shema, not so much. Although it does talk about proper time, they also, but over here it's much more emphasis. We'll see why in a second. So the Yarkas says like this. Now that we've established that the word B'chukosai Teilechu does not mean mitzvahs, it means Torah study. Therefore, in the first pasuk, we've got three things. Have a look. In B'chukosai Teilechu, walking in my statutes, refer to Torah study. Mitzvosai Tishmu, you shall guard my mitzvahs. What did we say last week? What does guarding mitzvahs refer to? Negative commandments, keeping the negative commandments. The Lysa say. Va'asisem oisem, you shall do them, is the positive commandments. So the Torah is talking about here the collective experience of Torah observance, which is Torah study, staying away from the negative commandments, doing the action mitzvahs, the positive commandments. Okay. The Kli Yakar explains that corresponding to all these three things are the three rewards, the three venosatis, the three I will give you. Why? So he develops it like this. Rain, and therefore sustenance, he brings from many sources, is the reward for Torah study. Because you know, in Pirkei Avos it says, Im ein kemach ein Torah. If there's no food, you cannot study Torah. But Im ein Torah ein kemach. If there's no Torah, there's no sustenance. Because Torah generally is very, very much compared to the concept of eating, food. Mitzvahs are compared to garments. Torah is compared to food. Why? Because Torah is something we understand, we internalize. And in Tehillim, David HaMelech, King David says, "V'sei roscha b'soich me'ai." He says to Hashem, "Your Torah is in my stomach." In other words, something that we can understand and internalize, like something you eat, right? So therefore, it's very common to find that the concept of rain is a reward for Torah study. However, says the Kli Yakar, we've got to be very careful here with the words. The Torah is not talking about the reward of rain here; that we have other places, because the Torah is not only talking about Torah study, as we established before. The Torah is not talking about regular Torah study. The Torah is talking about commitment to Torah study, about affixing times which are specific for Torah study. And therefore, if you have a look at the reward, it's also there. It doesn't say, I will give you rain. It says, look at the Pasuk Dalet, Pasuk 4. It says, V'nasati gishmeichem be'itom, I will give you rain in its right time. In other words, if you commit, there's rain, and then there's rain which falls according to the program at exactly the right time. Time which is convenient, time that's good for the agriculture. In fact, eventually Mashiach comes and says, Rashi brings that the rain will fall late Friday night, so it doesn't inconvenience anyone, no one's traveling, and so on and so forth, right? So Hashem says, not only I will commit to giving rain, which is a reward for Torah study, but I will give you rain in its correct time because you have committed to specific times for Torah study. You have committed to Torah study in a way of chukim, in a way where it's a decree, it's set, and it's in stone, just like a chukah, and it cannot be moved, just like a chukah. So too, I will commit to giving rain in its exact right time. And that's why this reward is a reference to the first part of the pasuk. The next vinosati is about security. What does that correspond to? Negative commandments. What is negative commandments? Notwithstanding the deep explanation we gave last week, but on a simple level, the negative commandments means staying away from things that are negative. If we do that, says Hashem, I will give you security. What's security? Staying away, keeping out the things that are negative forces. Peace in the land, but defeating of all the enemies and the sword not coming to the land and so on and so forth. It's keeping away forces of destruction, forces of division, and that's a reward for the mitzvahs loisei, for keeping the negative commandments. And then finally, he says the third venosati is venosati mishkani b'soichim. I will give my mishkan, I will dwell among you. That's clear. The link is very clear. That's a link to keeping the positive commandments. What is the idea behind every positive commandment? With every positive commandment we do, we bring Hashem into the world. We bring holiness to the world. We take a piece of parchment and we make it holy. Take a candle, we make it holy. We take our money, we give tzedakah, we make it holy. The whole idea of positive commandments is bringing God's presence, making God feel at home in the world. It's making the world a dwelling place for Hashem. And therefore, says the Kli Yakar, that third thing, the third venasati is a reference to the third part of the pasuk. Just a very beautiful way of explaining how the three venasatis actually refer to the three parts of the pasuk. So rain, sustenance, is a reward for the first part of the pasuk, which is commitment to Torah study. Security and keeping away the forces of destruction and enemy forces is the reward for keeping negative commandments. Hashem dwelling among us and not being intolerant of us is the reward for keeping positive commandments, and each one links to each other in a direct way. Just a little bit on that theme, just share with you something that the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says. I won't show you the whole thing because it will take a very long time. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh is a very, very famous commentary on the Chumash. It was written by a great Sephardi sage called Reb Chaim Ben Attar. I think I've mentioned this before. He lived about 300 years ago. He wrote his commentary on... apparently the story goes he didn't have any sons, but he had daughters and he taught them extensively, and he wrote the commentary on Chumash for them. Very, very deep commentary. They were obviously knowledgeable people. And he addresses things Kabbalistically and interpretation, all different kinds of angles. So he says, he also brings this concept of chukosai teilechu, that the word chukko is a reference to Torah study, and teilechu means to follow that commitment to Torah study. And he has a bit of a different take. He says, well, first of all, why is it called chukka? Why is it a decree? So he says like this, because we have to study Torah. Sometimes people pursue knowledge, and pursuing knowledge is a pleasurable thing to do. However, we know that one very, very important component of Torah study is review, called chazara, to review what we've learned. The reviewing of Torah study is actually not a very pleasurable experience. People always look for new things. To go over the same things we've learned again and again and again, sometimes it's hard. That's a hard commitment. And he says that's one of the things that Torah is hinting to you, the concept that you need to study Torah with a commitment. That the commitment means not just to pursue things which are intellectually interesting and stimulating, but actually to absorb Hashem's Torah by committing to review again and again and again. So it's a chukka, it's a decree, it's a hard thing, it's a real commitment. Then he says, it also says an interesting thing. He says that the Torah says b'chukoy sai. B'chukoy sai just doesn't mean my decree, my statutes. It means my statutes plural. Right? It doesn't say my statute, it says my decree, it says my decrees. So he says, why, if we're referencing the Torah study, why does the pasuk refer to Torah study in the plural? He says, because that's a reference to the two parts of the Torah, the oral Torah and the written Torah. And that's why we need to commit to studying both. Then he goes into a whole, launches into a whole explanation of why does it say teilechu, to walk in the Torah. What's the reference here of walking, following, walking, right? Like, because normally if you're talking about Torah study, teilechu is not the word. That's the whole problem with this phrase. It's a reference to Torah study, and no part of the phrase actually refers to Torah study. Chukka means a mitzvah, teilechu means to walk. Teilechu normally means to follow, like to follow in the ways of Hashem, but that's not normally the phrase you use in regard to study. He says, why does Torah use that phrase? So the Or HaChaim launches into explanation. He gives about 40 different explanations. Why the word teilechu, which I'm not going to share all of it with you now. I'll just a couple. He says, first of all, he says a similar thing that Kli Yakar. He cites the same medrash that the Kli Yakar does, about Dovid HaMelech walking to the places of study. And he says that's part of what Hashem is saying, not just to study Torah, but to commit to fixing times and to walk to those places that are conducive to Torah study, to go to the base of medrash, to go to the study halls and so on. Then he says also another reason, he says, because it's important for us to know when we study something, that everything we study has such depth that it's multi-layered. Like we know, for example, that on one level, everything we learn has four layers before we start with any more. right? The pshat, the literal meaning, the midrashic interpretation, things that alludes to the esoteric, pshat, remez, drush, and soid, each one at the 70 angles we are told. There's so many different ways to explore and to research Torah concepts. And therefore the Torah emphasizes that learning Torah has to be in a way teilechu. Teilechu means to walk, explore. Don't just learn. Explore, research, delve. Right? And that all is sort of, the imagery there is, comes from the word teilechu, to go, to seek, in other words. To follow and uncover and unearth all the various different angles and aspects of Torah study. In his seventh reason, he gives an interesting, cute little reason. He says, he quotes the saying from Chazal, that have a goyle limkoim Torah, that if a person wants to really succeed in Torah study, you have to go into exile, you have to go away from your comfort zone. You have to, like when we normally say this with younger people, that they go overseas, they go to learn in yeshiva, you know, staying home and just, you know, every day attending school, that's one thing, but actually to go away and to completely immerse yourself in Torah study, again, hinted in the word teilechu. Teilechu means to go. You've got like Yaakov Avinu went to yeshiva, and so on and so forth. So these are just various reasons. As I say, it gives about 40 reasons of why the Torah uses the word teilechu. Okay, that's just a little bit of the introduction to the Torah. But what I want to share with you now is an interesting concept. It's an interesting idea going to the end of the parasha. But let me show you what the context of this explanation is. There's a idea which is written, actually it's cited in a Kabbalistic book called Sefer Yetzirah. Sefer Yetzirah is a very interesting book. It's a very cryptic book. It's not for regular study. It's a book that talks about the formulas that Hashem used to create the world. The Aleph base, the letters, the formulas, and so on and so forth. And there's beautiful different phrases that we take from Sefer Yetzirah that we use in study. One of the phrases that he uses there is, Na'utz tchilosan b'soifon b'soifon b'tchilosan, which means that the beginning of something is always rooted in the end, and the end is rooted in the beginning. Right, so whenever you have something, the beginning and end of things are always connected. And this can happen on many levels. And it also happens in learning. We sometimes find that when we do like a tractate of Gemara, we'll find an interesting connection if we explore it between the beginning of the Masechta and the end of the Masechta. So what I want to show you, this week is B'chukosai, so we end the whole of Sefer Vayikra, the book of Vayikra. There's a glaring connection between the end of B'chukosai and the beginning of Vayikra, which I'll show you in a minute. But upon delving a bit deeper, it actually becomes a fascinating connection. And then it also translates into a connection between the end of B'chukosai and the beginning of B'chukosai. So you got the beginning and end of the Parsha, which we have to look at. But we also have to look at the beginning and the end of the whole Sefer. You with me? Because we're looking at B'chukosai on two levels. We're looking at it as a Parsha of the week. We're also looking at it at the end of the book of Vayikra. So therefore, if we're going to apply the principle of notes, chilas and besoifim, of connecting the end and the beginning, we need to look at two beginnings, the beginning of Vayikra and the beginning of B'chukosai as well. And in that explanation, we'll also have a bit of a different insight to why the Torah uses the word chukim here at the beginning, even though it's referencing Torah study, but it uses the word chukah. Okay? Let's have a look. Let's go to the end of the parasha, and I'll show you something interesting. So at the end of the parasha, page 720, at the bottom, the bottom line. At the end of the parasha, the Torah discusses, in a particular context, but the Torah discusses two sacrifices. Now we know that they're karbonis. The book of Vayikra talks about karbonis, sacrifices. And there are many, many different types of sacrifices, right? It happens to be that at the end of B'chukosai, the Torah talks about two particular sacrifices. One of them is Bechor, the firstborn animal. There's a halach in the Torah that the firstborn animal is holy. In ancient times, if a Jew owned an animal and the animal gave birth to its firstborn, that firstborn animal had to be taken to the Beis HaMikdash and offered up as a sacrifice. Incidentally, today it still applies if you're a Jewish farmer, and it's a big problem because that animal then is can't use it, and it's a whole issue what to do with it, and you've got to wait till it got some blemish, and once a blemish, you can redeem it. It's a whole business. Often what they do is, just as a practical thing, it's an interesting thing, because today you can't bring it as a carbon, but yet the animal still has holiness, which means you can't use it for anything. And you, right? So that's a big problem. One of the ways to get around it is, sorry? Well, you can't use it as a pet, really. You gotta actually just let it be. And that's actually hard. So, I mean, you feed it and everything, but, one of the ways, the halacha is that it only applies to a Jewish farmer, and if the Jewish person completely owns the animal. If the animal is partly owned, Jew and non-Jew, then the firstborn of the animal doesn't apply the same halacha. So one of the ways it's done is that an animal that you know is going to give birth to its first calf or whatever, to half sell the animal to a non-Jew and to have enter into some sort of partnership where the animal then doesn't receive its holiness. But anyways, okay, that's just an interesting fact. But the Torah refers to, and that's, I'll just give you the context. The context here is the Torah is actually talking about something else. The Torah is talking about consecrating animals, like taking animals that aren't holy and making them holy. But then the Torah says, well, just be careful. Have a look at the bottom of page 720. Ach b'choyr asher yuvukar, but any firstborn that will become the first one, l'Hashem, which goes to Hashem, b'behemun, any animals, lo yakdish oyser, you can't concentrate it, you can't make it holy, whether it's an ox or a sheep, because l'Hashem already belongs to God. In other words, it's holy as it's born. So don't, in the laws of consecrating animals, leave those animals out, because those animals are holy already. So Hashem makes reference here to the b'chor, the firstborn animal, which is a sacrifice to God. Right? I mean, it talks about the specifics elsewhere, but this is a reference here. Another sacrifice, the Torah then explains a little bit later, at the end of the parasha, Pasuk Lamed Beis, verse 32, is what we call Meiser Behemo. In ancient times, farmers once a year had to take the animals and take one out of every 10 animals and bring it as a sacrifice. Take it up to Yerushalayim, bring it as a sacrifice, but that wasn't a burnt offering, it was a sacrifice where those who brought it could partake in it in the Kohanim, it was a whole thing. How do you do it? What they used to do is as follows. V'chol masar, look, have a look at Pasuk Lamed Beis, Pasuk 32. V'chol masar bokor v'tzoin, all the tenth, the tithes, cattle and sheep, koil asher yavor tachas hashovet, anything that passes under the stick, ha'asiri yi'akodesh l'Hashem, the tenth will be holy to God. What does that mean? So what they used to do is they used to have this whole herd of animals, right? And they had to give one every ten to God as a sacrifice. How would they do that? Was as follows. They would make a narrow door and let the animals come out and count them. And every tenth one, the farmer would give a touch with a stick with paint on it, and they would know that's the animal that became holy. And the idea was you weren't supposed to select good animals, bad animals, because normally when you bring if you dedicate an animal to Hashem, you're supposed to take a nice animal. But this is irrelevant. Whatever tenth animal comes out, you make it holy. You give it a clap with the stick with the paint, and it becomes holy. You make it holy. That's the two sacrifices that the Torah talks about. Now, on the surface, there's a very clear connection between the end of Bukhakais and the beginning of Vayikra, because the book of Vayikra is about Karbanis. The whole thing of Vayikra, the very beginning of Vayikra, Hashem calls to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he says, go and tell the Jewish people, this is the law of sacrifices. That's on the surface, but there's a much deeper connection, and a specific connection to these two sacrifices. So in order to understand this, we have to go all the way back to the beginning of Vayikra. And then we'll come back to B'chuk HaYisai. Okay, let's have a look. Page 544. Now, this interpretation of a pasuk I actually shared with you once, and I'm going to just do it again so you understand it, so therefore we can connect it afterwards. This is like this. Let's have a look at the beginning of Vayikra. Vayikra al Moshe, and God called to Moshe, Vayadabar Hashem elav, and Hashem spoke to him, Oyel Moed Lamer, from the tent of meeting. He spoke to him from the Mishkan. And he said the following, Dabar al Bnei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, Vamarta Lehem, and say to them, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban l'Hashem. A man who will bring from you a korban to God. Min ha-behema, min ha-bokar, min ha-tzoin, from the animals, from the cattle, from the sheep, Takrivu es korbanchem, you need to bring your sacrifices. Okay? That's what the Torah says. Now, I've shared this with you before, but this pasuk is very problematic. The sentence order and the whole grammar of the pasuk is a very problematic pasuk. Why? First of all, if you wanted to say a man who will bring from you a korban, it sounds like you are the korban. It should have said a man from amongst you who will bring a korban, right? So it should have said, Adam mikem ki yakriv korban. With me? And he said, doesn't say that it says, Adam ki yakri mekem, a man will bring from you a carbon. It says, you are the carbon. Number one. Number two, the word yakriv is singular and third person. A man who he will bring from you a carbon to God. And then mid pasuk, the pasuk switches. Min abahema, min abakim, min atzayim, from animal, takrivu, you plural shall bring your sacrifices. Switches to plural, second person. Okay? So, one of the explanations which is brought down in a sefer called Likutei Torah, and I've shared this with you before, but I want to revise it, because we said it's a mitzvah to review, so it's okay. Right? That actually this pasuk has to be read on a whole deeper level. As every pasuk has, we just talked about that as well, there are many, many layers to each pasuk, so we can take this pasuk out of its literal meaning, and read it on a deeper level. By doing that, we'll answer some of these questions. And the explanation is, in a nutshell, that the pasuk, the whole idea of a korban, the word korban, sacrifice, is the idea of kiruv, coming closer to God. And in becoming closer to God and being inspired and making the connection with God, there's often a two-part process. Part of the process is that God first of all inspires us, that suddenly we have experiences of tremendous inspiration. God gives us opportunity to feel close. He stirs up something within us that suddenly we feel connected and feel close. And then we have the famous problem that often when we have that inspiration, it disappears very quickly. It almost disappears as fast as it came. So today I can feel, come back in the morning with a sudden inspiration, I'm going to commit, I'm going to do, I'm going to learn, I'm going to daven, and then it goes away. Why is that? So we've explained this before, that the reason is because we've got two parts to our being. One part is the intrinsic holiness that we have inside of us called the soul, the neshama, right? And the second part is the rest of us called the animal. The nefesh abam is the animal soul. So the godly soul, the animal soul, the soul, the body, whichever way you want to break it up. Essentially, it's the part of us that is intrinsically holy, and there's a part of us which resists spiritual growth. It can be brought over, but it resists spiritual growth. The part of us that's holy often is also trapped. And a shamma, a soul, sometimes also trapped and doesn't find its proper expression. So sometimes what Hashem does for us is He releases the neshama. He inspires us so that the neshama suddenly wakes up. And while that is happening, the following is happening. In other words, when Hashem inspires us, He doesn't inspire the whole of us on purpose, intentionally. He only inspires the neshama. He gives the opportunity, He kickstarts the neshama, so the neshama should wake up and start burning. At that time, the reason that we feel fully inspired is because our neshama, our soul, has woken up, and because it's woken up, it's now in charge, and it anesthetizes the animal. So the animal has no koyach, has no power, and therefore it feels like we're consumed by the inspiration, although we're not. Part of us is still resistant, but that part's gone to sleep. So what's operating now is just the neshama, just the soul, which is so fully charged and so fully inspired and charged up that it's overpowered and overwhelmed everything else about us, so we feel completely powered. The next morning, however, what happens is the animal makes a comeback. The animal says, hold on a second, I didn't agree to this, right? And suddenly it fights back. And when it fights back, suddenly our neshama weakens and it starts to disappear. So what's the plan? The plan is that as soon as we become inspired, we need to know and acknowledge and be conscious of the fact that the whole of us hasn't been brought over. And we have to take steps to refine and to train and to elevate the animal part of us, to work with the animal part of us, to work hard. And that takes a lot of effort on our part. We have to put in the effort. We have to go out of our comfort zone. We have to do the refining. We have to do the elevating so that the animal part of us can come across. And that's what this pasuk says. Let's have a look. Let's read this pasuk a different way. That whole formula I've just explained to you is in this pasuk. Says the pasuk. Vayikra still. Yeah. So he says like this. Speak to the Jewish people and say the following. Adam. 544. Speak to the Jewish people and say, Adam. So in Kabbalah it says, this Adam doesn't refer to the man. It refers to what we call the Adam HaElyon, the supernal man. It's calling God. Adam. When the supernal man, ki yakriv mikem korban Hashem, when he meaning God, third person, will yakriv, will bring a korban, he will bring close from you, you will be the korban, he will bring you close to God, Right? Pause. Know, however, that at that point, the only part of you that will be brought close is the soul. That's what his job is. Adam, the supernal man, God, ki yakriv, he will bring a korban from amongst you. He will make you the korban. He'll make you feel close. He'll make you feel inspired. But I can tell you now, says God, if you don't do some work on your own, if you don't put in the effort, it's going to disappear. And therefore, as soon as we've said that, now let's switch. Min ha-behema, from the animal, from your own animal. Min ha-bokar, from the cattle. Min ha-tzoyin, from the sheep, because everyone's got a different kind of animal. Separate discussion. Takrivu, you, plural. You, meaning the Jewish people, should bring your sacrifices. The first korban was, he will bring, in the singular, because talking about God. That's the one that God does. He will bring you, collectively, he'll bring you close, but it'll only be the soul. But then you've got to work with the animal, min ha-behema, min ha-bokar, min ha-tzoyin, from the animal, from the thing. Takrivu, you need to bring your own korban. You need to put in the effort. You, meaning you, second person plural, Jewish people, need to then put in the effort and bring your sacrifices. You have to work with your animal. You have to make sure that the whole of you, every part of you, is becoming a korban to God. Clear?
Yeah. Once you get the inspiration, that will sustain it.
That will sustain. That will make sure it's permanent, correct. When you bring all of you along, then it won't fight back. Make the rest of you non-resistant, so therefore it won't fight back. Naot tchilasan b'soifan. The beginning has to relate to the end. What are the end? The two sacrifices of Bechor and the tithe, the tenth animal. What's the difference clearly in this pasuk between the korban of the firstborn and the korban of the tenth animal? The korban of the firstborn is the one that's born already holy. God makes it holy. That comes first. That's the one that God makes holy. The second korban the Torah talks about is the one of Maaser, tenth. You have to make it holy. You have to put, it's not holy. You've got to make it go through the little doorway, and each tenth one you have to make holy. What does the tenth one represent? It represents the 10 powers of the soul. Because when you make the 10th one holy, it affects all the 9. In other words, you've got to work with your 10 powers. There's an intrinsic holiness that's within you. There's a spark that's in you that comes from God. That's the Bechor, the firstborn. The firstborn means the essence of who you are. The essence of who you are is holy. It needs expression sometimes. So God motivates it and he ignites it and he inflames it so it becomes holy. But Vasiri, but if you want to talk about all the 10 animals, you want to talk about the 10 parts of your animal personality, that you've got to make holy. You've got to make it holy. You've got to put it through. That's your job. That's your effort. The two sacrifices at the end of Bechor Kosai reflect the two korbanos that Hashem is talking about at the beginning of Vayikra. The korban that Hashem brings, which is your soul, he does it for you, and the korban that you've got to bring, which is the rest of you, the rest of your personality. Same formula. Which is also then hinted in the beginning of Bechor Kosai. Why? Let's have a look. Let's go back to the pasuk. Again, page 708. So this week's parasha again starts off with Bechukosai Teilechu. Walk in my statutes, correct? So why does it use the word Chukosai? So we said it refers to Torah study, we've given different reasons. But there's another reason why it uses the word Chukim, that's explained in many, many places. The word for Chukim, right, also comes to the word Chakiko, to be engraved. To be engraved. And in Kabbalah, it talks about two different types of letters. Engraved letters and written letters. What's the difference between engraved letters and written letters? When something is engraved in a stone, then the letters and the stone are one and the same thing. You can't separate between them. The letters are the stone. When you write letters of ink on a piece of parchment or a piece of paper, the ink and the parchment are two different things. The proof is that you can rub it out, you can erase it, you can peel them off, whatever the case is. So too with our Yiddish kind of connection to Hashem, there's two levels of connection. There's a part of our neshama which is so deep and so bound up with Hashem that it's called Oisius HaChakiko, it's engraved letters. Engraved letters means there's a part of our neshama where our connection to Hashem is inseparable, that we and our connection to God is one thing. Then there's a part of us that it's not. There's a part of us where The conscious part of us is that our connection to God is not that we are one thing with God. We are two separate things. We've got to work very hard to superimpose, so to speak, God's imprint onto our personality. That takes effort. And that's what the Pasuk is saying. Pasuk is starting off with, first of all, you need to understand, you need to ignite the level of you, b'chukosai. That's the level of engraved letters. That's the depth of the neshama. The b'chur, the firstborn of who you are. The neshama, the inspiration that comes from God. The God-given ability that God makes you aware of the fact that you have a soul. And that soul is bound up with Hashem like engraved letters. It's inseparable from the connection to God. And that's the soul that gives you the power to be infinite, teilechut, to walk, to grow. Right? That's part one. Part one of being connecting to Hashem is you've got to reveal within you that spark of soul, which is oisis hachakiko, it's the engraved letters, but that normally is done by God. God allows you to reveal the soul. But then, just like the second korban, you've got to then make it flourish. You've got to extend it, elaborate on it. That's moisai tishvuru, asisim oisim, you've got to do the mitzvahs, you've got to do them on every part. You've got to do the mitzvahs on the level of action, the level of understanding, because you've got to let the connection then permeate the rest of you. The animal part of you, which is not engraved letters, but yet it's full part of the purpose, to make sure that every single part of you comes on board. A similar sort of division between the first part of the korban, the second korban, and the bechor, and the tenth animal, same sort of idea. The stuff, the part of us which is intrinsically holy, and the part of us which we need to work to get on side. Same idea. The written letters and the engraved letters. Torah starts off with the engraved letters, but then goes to working with the rest of us, which is bringing every part of us on side and part of the serving of God. So there you have the connection between the beginning of Yikra and the end, and the beginning of the Parsha and also the end. Good.